has been something of a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided against itself. On the one hand, we have proudly professed the principles of democracy. And on the other hand, we have sadly practiced the very antithesis of those principles. Slavery and segregation have been strange paradoxes in the nation founded on the principle that all men are created equal. And yet more than ever before, we are challenged to realize this dream, for the shape of the world today does not afford us the luxury of an anemic democracy. And the price that America must pay for the continued oppression of the Negro and other minority groups is the price of its own destruction. The hour is late, and the clock of destiny is ticking out, and we must act now before it is too late. We must not seek to solve this problem merely to appeal to Asian and African peoples. In the final analysis, racial discrimination must be uprooted from American society because it is morally wrong. And segregation must be ended because it stands against all of the noble precepts of our Judeo-Christian heritage. Segregation must be ended because it substitutes an I-it relationship for the I-thou relationship and relegates persons to the status of things. And so it must be done not merely because it is diplomatically expedient, but because it is morally compelling. And therefore, all people of goodwill, North and South, will work with grim and bold determination to bring an end to all of the evils that we find in our society. And I think this is the significance of the movement taking place in the South today. This is the great significance of the student movement that you've read so much about. For as these students sit down at lunch counters, they are in reality standing up for the best in the American dream and taking our whole nation back to those great wells of democracy which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And that is a need for people all over this nation to be creatively maladjusted until this problem is solved. This is the challenge of the hour. This is the dimension of breath calling us to be so concerned about America, so concerned about the world, so concerned about our brothers in need that we will take a risk for that which is morally right. The risk of being unpopular, the risk of being criticized, the risk of being dismissed as a dangerous rabble-rouser and agitator, the risk of even being called a red because you believe in brotherhood. This is a risk because one comes to the point of knowing that discrimination on the basis of race or religion is wrong and somebody must stand up. This is the dimension of breath in the area of race relations. Now, this text also has a great deal of meaning. In the international situation, it means that we must be concerned about other nations, for no nation can live alone in the world today. Nations are interdependent.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Susan Franson. And that, of course, was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Thank you for listening in. I'm one of your co-hosts, and we have another guest co-host with us, Davida Harden, president of the League of Women Voters and a member of the Martin Luther King Jr. Birthday Celebration Committee. And she's here to help commemorate the day along with some other guests that we look forward to introducing you to as well.
Davida and Susan, you attended the screening of Selma on Saturday at the Ames Public Library, is that right?
Yes, we did, and that's the kickoff event for this weekend celebration. We were both there, and we were in the same discussion group. The movie was designed to be much more than just a filming of an Academy Award-nominated film. It was really to educate, but more than that, to create a chance for community conversation.
Yes, that's true. The question and answer session after the movie was very enlightening. A lot of good points were made. A lot of good ideas were shared. Comments were made to describe what we felt. Some of us who remember that day. So to have a dialogue with others in a diverse group was really, really insightful. And I think we've made some progress in just being able to have a conversation regarding racial discrimination with the right to vote in Selma.
Were there a lot of people there?
I would say about 25, 30.
Yes, it was much a smaller crowd than I expected. I arrived early because I thought, oh, we won't be able to get a seat. But it was a very interesting group. It was slightly majority African-American.
Slightly.
And I've been around for a long time, and it was like a who's who. Mm. And it was a very wonderful chance for people to really hear.
The majority of the group that was there, African-Americans, were NAACP members, of which I am a member. And so it was good to see them there. But I was really struck by the span of age. One gentleman, I will say, was probably in his 80s. And the youngest, girl, probably 10. So that was a good group. Good group to, and everything in between, to be able to have that discussion and see the movie together.
So there were people there that remembered the event and that were born long after.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
David and I were in the same discussion group. They broke this down into small groups, and everybody stayed and participated as far as I could see. And then we had a big circle afterwards. In our group, we had a real nice span of diversity. We had two women who actually remembered these events, African-American women who remembered, three women who remembered them. Well, actually, four of us remembered them. Mm-hmm. There was only one, I think, who was too young. The question that we addressed, and we'll play a little clip of that, was why Selma?
Why Selma? Why that movie to be shown?
And why that place?
Why that place? That was a turning point, I would say, in the civil rights movement. That was when enough was enough. You know, after seeing the images from Birmingham, the right to vote was significant in the movement. Because we know that it was once attained, it was empowering, and that was played out through the movie. The right to vote, then you are able to, when you register to vote, you are able to go into the jury pool. You go into the jury pool, you're able to sit on the juries and hopefully affect how the outcome of trials in Selma. Mm-hmm. Selma, on the national stage, the President Johnson being very reluctant to overturn state law, Governor Wallace very reluctant to overturn local law. So it was, Selma was just the right place. It was the right place at the right time to effect change.
Do we have time for that clip?
Mm-hmm. I look at the bridge. It was a bridge from Selma to Montgomery, but it's also kind of symbolic as a bridge from being, you know, not able to vote to being able to vote from just a bridge in the movement. It was very symbolic to me. I didn't get it the first time I watched the movie. Got it this time, though. Yeah. And as he said, that the Selma was the perfect stage drama. It was the perfect stage. So it played out very well.
Yeah, I'm thinking about his conversation, the registrar's office, the voting rights, and that's what made it perfect, that it could be contained, it was doable, that there was the advantage of, definitely, as you talked about, the reaction that he could get in that location and being able to make that very visible across the country with that coming into people's homes at that time.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure that I understood at really. It's sort of soaking in about why Selma, but hearing you all speak, it becomes more clear that there was that clear juxtaposition between nonviolence and the type of situation that it had to be set up against. I mean, if there weren't going to be any violence, then you wouldn't have the tension. So you had to have a place where you knew that was going to happen. And I just can't comprehend walking into a bull bat. You know, I don't know how those people have that kind of courage. Wow.
Oh, they do it in war. And
I've been in the Army, and I've had the training for it, and I know what that's like. You train to take that, and you train to hate the other person so you can do it. That's what all military training is really about. Nonviolence is such a contrast to that, that you have to be able to, boy, talk about being disciplined. Discipline for nonviolence is much greater, in my mind, than discipline for military. Just by a factor of 100. Boy.
The last comment did bring up the issue of nonviolence, because that was essential in this film.
Very, very much so. It's kind of hard when you watch the movie how, as the gentleman said, to be nonviolent. You can't fight back when someone is swinging a bat at you or a pipe at you or tear gassing you. Yeah, that's really, it was discipline. It was a disciplined movement. And that's one of the things that we can admire about Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement, that it was nonviolent.
And another issue that came up in this discussion of the film, as well as strongly in the film, was faith. Now, of course, the fact that most of the people in the movement with Dr. King were of the same faith. They were really moved by their Christian faith. But then after Bloody Sunday, when there was a call put out for people to join them, there was an overwhelming outpouring of people who came down to Selma. And in the film, I remember seeing Dr. Martin Luther King embracing someone who obviously was a Greek Orthodox priest, that he knew him.
Yes. He had a relationship with him prior to Selma.
We had a little comment in our discussion group about interfaith.
Yeah, I certainly agree that faith is central to this whole thing, and there's no way that someone like Martin Luther King Jr. could have done what he did without that strength of faith. And another thing that impressed me, and you sort of forget about it until you see it on film, that there was interfaith support too. And that's encouraging to me at a time like this when we really need to draw on that from all faiths. But Dr. King was able to just, it seemed like, draw out the best in all people. And that's another little piece that I enjoy out of seeing the movie, reminding of that.
This is Local Talk here on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I am one of your hosts, Susan Franzen. Davida Harden and I went to a screening last Saturday of the movie Selma, and we've been sharing some of the thoughtful responses and reflection of the folks after the movie. And I would like to go back and say we ended rather abruptly on that very moving statement of faith.
Yes.
Maybe we'd like to say a little more about that.
Susan, faith allows you to see the world through a different prism. It allows you to see the world through part of that prism, love, humanity, dignity. It allows you to control your emotions and to be able to face adversity with a different temperament. So that played out with Dr. King. He knew that. And there was one scene in the movie where right before they got ready to go to the second march, he called a friend, and he said, "I need to hear from God." And the lady sang. And as she was singing, you could just see him as if going into deep prayer. And that's what it takes. It takes prayer. It takes your faith to allow you to go forward with any movement to, as I said earlier, to see the world and see your assignment through a different prism, not through violence, not through hatred. Hatred breeds all kind of ill feelings. Oh, you want to revenge, you want to attack. But love does just the opposite. It calms you down. It lets you approach the situation with calmness and coolness of mind and sober mind. And that's what he needed. And that's what the people needed. You know, if you look at his inner circle, a lot of them were pastors and reverends of different faith walks, you know.
And then at the second march across the Pettus Bridge, they were from all faiths.
Yes, all faiths. I think we have it more than some of us want to realize. I really do. When we see the, and I hate to bring it up, but I will, when you see the events that occurred in Ferguson and Baltimore and other cities, it is the faith community that calms things down, that denounced the violence, that denounced the looting and the burning. It is people from the faith community. who put together task force, who get people together so they can have a conversation, you know, the people from the community, the council people, and the law enforcement. It is the faith community that sets the stage for meaningful dialogue to occur. You know, it's still happening today.
Well, we have another guest, yes. I think, who could speak to that.
Aaron Hutchins is with us. Welcome, Aaron. Aaron is an Iowa State student, and he's with the National Society of Black Engineers. And since Iowa State is a prominent engineering school, such an association could have an important impact on race relations in this profession. So welcome, Aaron, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Aaron, explain, what is the Society of Black Engineers, and what does it do?
The National Society of Black Engineers is an organization comprising of well over 30,000 college students in engineering. They were formed in 1975 at Purdue University by six undergraduate students and an advisor. The basis of the program is to bring in recruitment and retention of minority engineers in society. So around that time in 1975, of course, this is a very important thing, especially after the Civil Rights Movement. People just started to settle into universities and started to commit to higher learning.
And what does the society do today at Iowa State?
We do pretty much the same thing. We bring in minority students for retention and recruitment. We are a resource for minority students to come and receive scholarships, to have opportunities to go to conferences and conventions where they have opportunities for career fairs, to get jobs, to connect with other engineering students, as well as have other opportunities for graduate programs. So we do a lot of different things. We are also involved in the community. We have a program called Engineering the Future, which we host at Ames Middle School. Basically, again, bringing in the recruitment from the younger side, we have a NSBE Junior program that is committed to basically getting the mindset of younger students into engineering and STEM fields because it's very needed in the society.
So you make presentations to students at middle schools?
We go to the middle school, do science experiments. It's basically strictly to engage the students, get them interested in the STEM fields, to come to places like Iowa State University to major in engineering or another STEM field. Mm-hmm. By the way, I didn't explain what STEM was, science, technology, engineering, and math fields, to be specific.
So it sounds like the association is furthering the profession of engineering in general by making these presentations?
Yes. So our program for Engineering the Future is specifically designed to cater to those students. NSBE came up with a theme to cater to students that are in fourth grade and above, right before college, because that is a critical age level to kind of get their minds thinking about engineering. That's when they are beginning higher level math courses. So it's a perfect time for them to kind of start thinking about engineering.
And so you explain to them what engineering is, or how do you do that with them?
Yeah, we bring it down to their level. Engineering, of course, goes to the simplest thing. So we could show them something like a pencil and explain the engineering that goes into that. And then all of a sudden their mind is intrigued to learn more about what engineering is, because a lot of people are confused about what engineering is. But the fact of the matter is we're all engineers in this room. So that's the beautiful thing about it.
Aaron Hutchins is an Iowa State student, and he's with the Society of Black Engineers. What kind of an impact has the society had?
Well, nationally, it's a great program. It's had a huge impact for minority students. Mm-hmm. It opens many doors. For me, myself personally, I've always wanted to be an engineer, and I've always seek to look for programs that kind of cater toward that. And the National Society of Black Engineers was one of the programs that reached out to me to say, hey, you can be an engineer and you can succeed in higher learning. And they've been a great part of my life, opening many doors. I've attended many career fairs, heard many great speeches from other engineers. Very inspiring things come from that organization.
What do you do in the association?
I am the treasurer for our chapter. The year before, I was the finance chair, so I kind of moved my way up in the finance zone of my chapter. So I basically am in charge of bringing in funds for our organization. One of the things that I pride myself in is being pretty good at that. Our organization, especially our chapter, has brought in many funds from organizations and other companies such as Caterpillar, Dow Jones, Garmin, Boeing. So we bring in thousands of dollars every year for our organization, and it has turned out to be very good for us. We are able to attend conferences and conventions at very low prices, and we're able to give back to the students in the organization. We are able to cater to their needs. We're able to have study tables. It just opens many doors. So that's one of my jobs.
And is this where the scholarship money comes from as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's scholarships on both the chapter, regional, and national level that has helped many minority students to succeed in other things, go on to graduate school, to continue the profession. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the big things we pride ourselves in is the retention part.
On this Martin Luther King Jr. Day, can you talk a little bit about what this day means to you? I am assuming you were not alive when he was alive.
Oh, I wasn't a gleam in my daddy's eye, my parents say.
So talk to us a little bit about what a day like this means to somebody like you.
Of course, I am young, but this is always a day for me to kind of sit and reflect about the status of our nation and of this campus at Iowa State University. And especially back home for me, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. And some of the challenges that we see on this campus and in other places around the nation are directly tied to what Dr. King was talking about.
Can you explain?
He was speaking on having peace and creating a society where we are all equal and all fair. Of course, a lot of work was done during the Civil Rights Movement. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done even today, even though there are those who say that, you know, there is no racism anymore. But there is obviously blatant racism, and there's obviously kind of the low-key racism that we kind of fight today. Obviously, with events going on around the nation as far as the police shootings and other violence that's been going on even when Dr. King was fighting for it. And you guys spoke about Selma earlier, and it just kind of made me think. When I was watching the film, it looked just like it is today. You know, you see the riot police kind of forcing the crowd back, having these ridiculous tactics to kind of fight crowds, peaceful crowds who are just trying to promote peace. The way they treated them is the same that it is today. And I think that's the important thing to look at. Even though all this work was done, there's still a lot of work to be done. So that is a very important thing to look on nationally and on this campus.
Can you reflect a little bit about last year's life on campus in this area?
Well, like I said,
a lot of things have happened in the last year.
Oh, of course, of course. A number of racially motivated things have happened in the past year. Some of the most recently was the things that went on when Donald Trump came into the Iowa State campus, how a student acted in ripping another student's sign, was simply peacefully protesting some of the ideas that Donald Trump may have. And the things that have went on my freshman year, I'm a junior now, my freshman year, where we were having peaceful protests in response to the Mike Brown shootings, kind of getting the campus to think about what's going on in the nation, how the campus reacted to that. We were called fire hazards. We were called people who are just wasting their time. And that kind of just shows, you know, the things that are going on this campus, the mindset, the ideas of people all around us. Of course, on the campus, people are from all over the world. But you see that the hate and some of the things that they say kind of reflect a negative society.
When you were part of these demonstrations as a result of the Michael Brown shooting, you felt that the majority of students at Iowa State, or a significant number of them, were hostile or not receptive to hearing your message?
Yes, moreover, not receptive, kind of in denial of what's going on. The basis of responses from other students that were not minority was pretty much, oh, this is not happening on our campus, so why is this important? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems like a ridiculous question, but that is a fair question. Why is it important on our campus? Well, it could happen on our campus at any time. We have police here. We have some of the same situations. So the things that have gone on in places like Mizzou can so easily happen here. But the good thing about those events, one of the organizations that I am in kind of worked toward working with Ames Police and the Iowa State University campus police to kind of be on our side with this thing. So they've been pretty helpful in creating a protest zones for us and making it safe for us, making sure no one would do anything hostile.
How did that come about? Were you in communication with them? Did you meet with them?
The Men of Color Collective on the campus arranged meetings with detectives and the chief of police on the Iowa State University's campus.
And what is the Men of Color Collective?
We are designed to cater to minority men on the campus to kind of be a basis of retention for a college campus, create discussions that are critical to race relations as well. So
this is a group of students?
Yes, a group of students.
Mm-hmm.
And advisors and faculty members as well.
Uh-huh. I'll see.
So we all come together. We have critical discussions on race relations. So one of our meetings, we called the chief of police to come in and kind of have a discussion of what's been going on, to kind of just outline the attitude of what the police is here, kind of create a communication base. Because what's been going on in the nation is there's a total lack of communication between the community and the police force. So, yes.
Can I just jump in real quick?
Sure, absolutely.
That is one of the things that the NAACP has been doing. We are holding educational dialogue sessions with the Ames PD and ISU Department of Safety to address these very issues. And so, yes, the chief and his team are really on board in hearing and understanding what it is to be a minority at ISU campus. So I'm very, very glad to hear that is kind of playing out and that they are involved, because that is what they told the NAACP, that they would be involved, that they would try to facilitate conversations and address some of these issues that students of color are experiencing at ISU. So that makes me very happy to know that we mm-hmm. are working together to avoid a situation.
Is there some plan in place if a crisis did happen?
I'm not sure what they have on their side, but you know, I'm sure they're committed to keeping the students safe on the campus in general. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just a good start for us to have as far as race relations go on the campus. Because at the time, you know, speaking for myself personally, I was very angry coming back from the summer after the Mike Brown shootings and things that have been going on in the nation as far as police brutality. You know, it's kind of hard to walk around campus as a target. You feel like a target as a black man on the campus, surrounded by a majority of white people. So it was a very critical time for me, and I'm just glad that the police force came in and kind of talked to us. We had a lot of other great discussions around campus concerning the same things. So it's a good outlet.
Now, there was also a discussion with President Leith at one point about relations on campus with minorities. And as I understand, as a result of that, there was a new office created for diversity and inclusion?
Yes, a brand new office, one in response to kind of the things that have been going on this past year. I know a couple of minority organizations came together to make sure that was one of the things that happened. It was on a list of requests that the university take action with the things that are going on the campus, because it kind of seemed like things were getting out of control and that the university needed to take extra measures to make sure that things are in control as far as race relations go. So this new office is one of the bigger steps that the university is taking. It's a great step. I think it's a great start for us to kind of cater to those needs.
So what changes would you like to see occur?
I'd just like to see more unity and more inclusion and more, you know, peace on this campus. Of course, there are things that have gone on this campus kind of still reflect some of the racial tensions that go on in society today. You know, I always want everybody to be at peace with what's going on.
Well, that doesn't seem like it's asking too much.
No.
But can you propose a concrete step that such an office could take to promote that?
Outreach. I think the biggest thing is outreach and bringing the Iowa State community together in discussion of mm-hmm. what's going on. Because the theme in the nation, especially on this campus, is to keep quiet about these racial things. But we need to speak out about them. Really tell how we feel, because a lot of us are afraid to speak out on how we feel because we are afraid of being politically incorrect, and we are afraid of hurting other people's feelings, and that's fair, but we need to talk about these things because we are all in this together. You know, we're all on the same campus. We live around each other. We work around each other. So it's important for our voices to speak out of how we feel, to kind of come up with a conclusion, come up with a solution for peace.
And for the university to support that.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Devita, any changes that you would like to see in the community?
First, let me say I'm very proud of what I've seen in the 5.5 years I've lived here in Ames.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to see is just more open, honest dialogue between ISU, the Ames community mm-hmm. as a whole, the school district. Aaron said, you know, stop being in denial. This is real. You know, even though we're 50, 60 years past the signing of the Civil Rights Bill and the Voting Rights Bill in 1965, The law is the law, but mm-hmm. how do we facilitate goodwill among men? That only happens through relationship. It mm-hmm. only happens through positive relationship.
Knowing each other
exactly. And Ames is small enough; we can do that. We can you know get the various agencies, organizations, and interfaith community. We can all sit around a table and have, maybe not at the same time, but we can have that conversation on what is, you know, asking the hard questions. What's wrong? How do we fix that? One of the things I want to speak to what Aaron was saying about what I saw that just broke my heart is very nice statue of George Washington Carver on campus. And some person put shaving cream all over it in, you know, very inappropriate areas. And I'm like, why? Why would you do that? What pleasure, you know, what a person get from doing that? It just, you know, it's another side of another form of hate. But to your question, I think right now, from what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, is it's going to take open, honest conversations. And to be true to yourself. And it's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I was wrong in how I felt about this or that, mm-hmm. and gaining understanding and being educated.
But the crucial thing I hear Aaron saying as well is that there needs to be institutional support for
yes.
people speaking up.
Right. But that's from the ISU side, and I respect that. But mm-hmm. it's from the community as a whole. Mm-hmm. ISU is a very, very important part of our life here in Ames. So mm-hmm. the conversation, the dialogue, everybody needs to sit at the table. Mm-hmm. From, you know, city government, ISU, the school district, need to have a representative at the table so we can identify these issues and what causes them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Peace, my heart will sing. Thanks to my.
As of last week, the Iowa legislature is now in session, and there have been some indications that there's some willingness to talk about things on the state level. Mm-hmm. Governor Terry Branstad officially opened the year with his condition of the state address on Tuesday, and one part of his agenda comes as a plus for improving racial relations. The governor signaled strong support for criminal justice reform, something that's been needed to be addressed for a while in Iowa, and Greta Anderson has more on that.
Iowa has a troubling record of racial disparity. Blacks in Iowa are incarcerated at a rate 13 times that of whites on a per capita basis, making our state's criminal justice system the worst for blacks in the nation. Iowa's chapter of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP, has been continually pressing state leadership, and Governor Branstad in particular, on this issue.
Last year, I was invited to participate on a panel at the NAACP's Iowa Summit on Justice and Disparities. I was invited by my friend, Betty Andrews, who has joined us today. Betty is the president. The efforts of the working group and the advocacy of Betty Andrews and others convinced me that we all need to work together to address justice in Iowa.
In his speech, Branstad promoted numerous measures to improve fairness, reducing phone rates for prisoners, which are often exorbitant, forming a working group on jury selection processes that promote fair racial representation, and ensuring confidentiality of juvenile delinquency records. The week before, the governor indicated his potential support for collecting race data for traffic stops, a key measure that could form the basis of an anti-racial profiling law. The heavy financial burden of the Iowa prison system played into the governor's basic argument, but he also had clearly heard and understood the specific concerns of black Iowans.
Ensuring fundamental fairness of our system is a worthy goal. But a fair and more equitable criminal justice system also aligns with the long-term interests of taxpayers who fund our criminal justice system. For example, in many cases, tax dollars may be better spent on rehabilitation rather than incarceration. We can take steps to make sure that when our criminal justice system does impose punishment, that we're punishing the right person, and that race does not play a role.
Last week, I spoke with Betty Andrews, the president of the NAACP Iowa-Nebraska chapter, to get her reactions to the governor's speech.
It was certainly an honor to represent the NAACP and be acknowledged by the governor for the work that we have been doing. I know that this mention in the condition of the state was a culmination of a lot of the work that we have been doing with the governor for the last 3 years, meeting regularly with him, and then also him being a special guest at our Iowa Senate on Justice and Disparities, at which he also appointed the governor's working group on criminal justice reform. And since then, that group has met and made great criminal justice reform recommendations, which is a good start. And so we see this as a step in the right direction in terms of criminal justice reform in the state of Iowa.
And the governor indicated that he, at least, is quite open to a lot of the things on your wish list as regards criminal justice. Well, what's your secret in getting through to him?
Well, I think that the big thing is that we are continuing to keep the lines of communication open. I think, you know, sitting down with him on a regular basis, we meet quarterly, is an opportunity for us to provide additional perspective, and that's what the NAACP has been doing. And just being able to reason together and take a look at what works well for all Iowans. You know, in our conversation, certainly there is back and forth, and we learn and he learns. And, you know, I think that we are working from our own vantage points. You know, certainly we, as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, we want to make sure that minorities have a fair chance. And the governor is definitely looking at all Iowans as well. So I think we're both looking for something that works for everyone.
And he called you his friend.
Yes. I thought that was sweet. And I think, you know, we've been working together long enough that we can kind of drop some of the pretense. And so I was honored that he called me his friend.
Well, it sounds like you're doing great work, Betty Andrews, president of the NAACP of Iowa.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me today.
All right. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Absolutely. It's going to be a full day of service for us, but we are looking forward to it.
That was Greta Anderson interviewing Betty Andrews, president of the Iowa-Nebraska chapter of the NAACP, about possible winds of change to reduce discrimination on the state level. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we have been commemorating Martin Luther King Jr. Day by focusing on where we are today and what changes will further the dream spelled out by Dr. King for a better society and the end to discrimination. Tune in to KHOI today for more MLK commemoration between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m.
Christine DeCoudreau is the Public Information Officer for Youth and Shelter Services, and this year she's chair of the Martin Luther King Celebration here in Ames. Christine, are you with us on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Great to have you join us. Thanks for checking in with us, and tell us a little bit about what's going to happen today here locally to commemorate Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Well, today the Volunteer Center of Story County will do their day of service, and they'll wrap up their day along with the community celebration over at the middle school, and we will actually be celebrating the 30th anniversary of this Ames celebration.
Yes, and volunteer service is always kind of a big part of that in Ames, isn't it?
Yes, it is. They always partner with us, and several other organizations partner with us for this community celebration. And this year, we're doing pretty big this year. We found out a lot of history throughout our research of the community celebration. And we're going to have our social time starting at 5:30, and about 6:15 we'll start our program. And we've got some new things going in our program this year that we haven't had before. We've actually also included some other students this year. We've got the Mitchell and Sawyer Elementary School singing this year with their director, Megan Gross. So new voices this year, new faces coming into the program. We're excited.
Who is the keynote speaker?
The keynote speaker will be Judge Odell McGee this year.
Can you tell us a little bit about that person?
Judge McGee, he is the Associate Judge of District 5 of Iowa, 5C of Iowa.
Which is where?
In Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
It'll, of course, tie into MLK, and our theme is Cost of the Dream. So,
Can you explain that a little bit, the cost of the dream?
With everything that's going on in today's society, we wanted to take a turn and look at how communities get band together and be together and work together and work towards a common goal. We wanted to take a look and see, you know, how we could change things and how people can be the change and how the youth and the generation now are the ones that are able to make that change.
It's an interesting word, the cost of the dream. Is the theme, in a way, looking at what kind of an investment the community makes? Is that what the meaning of the word cost is there?
Yes.
Good morning, Christine. This is DeVita.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. When we talked about the cost, the sacrifice that Dr. King made for his life, giving up his life, his family's life, you know, to facilitate his dream, you know, mm-hmm. piggybacking on the I Have a Dream speech, is that dream costs, and it costs a lot with his life. It costs us every day, you know, in our
society.
That's
right. And yeah. For those of us who are old enough to remember that the day when he was killed, it's a very, very terrible memory, I think, for everybody that experienced it. It's hard to describe how terrible that day was.
But it wasn't just the cost of his life. There were two martyrs in Selma.
Yes.
One was Jimmie Lee Jackson, and that funeral mm-hmm. that Dr. King spoke at really was the rallying cry for yes. what followed.
Yes,
and, of course, James Reeb, the white minister from Boston, mm-hmm. who was killed during the second march, was very important in really mobilizing the white community all over the country to realize. And today, all of those who have been killed by police, this is part of the cost right now.
Yes.
At the beginning of the show, we heard a clip from Dr. Martin Luther King where he talked about one of the costs as well was being ostracized for speaking up, which is, in a sense, what Aaron is addressing
exactly.
now and
yes.
and having to still addressed today. So, Aaron, you want the last word on this? as our future.
Well, we can only hope to have progress in this community. I can foresee more years, more decades of work to do as far as these race relations go. But it's important for people not to deny what's going on, to kind of be open about it, to kind of address it, because that's the only way we can impact change is if we address it and we try to solve it as if it were an engineering problem. We have to break it down from the root mm-hmm. of the problem, the source of it, which is hate, of course, and work towards a more peaceful society to work better together. So that's the only thing we can hope for. That's what I hope for our society. Mm-hmm. I hope to have more discussions like this more often and just be straightforward with what's going on. And just be better as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Christine, could you please tell us again the specifics about today's celebrations, where and when the commemoration will occur?
Today, it will begin at 5:30, and that will begin with social time. It will be at the Ames Middle School out on Mortensen, and we will start our program at 6:15 with Pastor Moses Ward, Friendship Baptist Church, will be doing welcome, and Marianne Campbell will be also there to give greetings from the city of Ames. We will also have youth from the different elementary schools and different programs that are done here in Ames, as well as our keynote speaker, Honorable Judge Odell McGee from the District 5 C of Iowa. He's an associate judge for the District 5 C of Iowa.
Okay, so, thank you so much, and thanks for taking the time to check in. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Christine DeCudreau, who's one of who is actually the chair of this year's Martin Luther King celebration. She's also the public relations officer for Youth and Shelter Services, and has been giving us the update on today's commemoration ceremonies for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day to be held at the middle school this evening. And we've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Susan Franson, with special co-host Davida Harden. Thank you for joining us, Davida, today.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
And also with us is Aaron Hudgens, who is an Iowa State student and treasurer of the National Society of Black Engineers. And thank you so much, Aaron, for joining us.
Thank you.
And it was great to have you. And KHOI reporter Greta Anderson spoke with Betty Andrews, who's president of the Iowa-Nebraska chapter of the NAACP.
And, of course, at the top of the hour, we heard a clip from a speech from Dr. King himself called The Future of Integration, delivered in June 1961. You can hear a recording of today's show online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it later today. Thank you, Ron. The posting will include links to all of the online events and resources that were mentioned during the show.
This show was engineered by Rick Morrison. Thank you, Rick. And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Bell of Kay Shelley. But today, let's go out with Stevie Wonder's Happy Birthday Song. And this Thursday, we'll be holding our first live cafe, and you are invited. Strong Like Bear will be performing here at KHOI at Douglas at 410 Douglas Avenue in a comfortable cafe setting. And Strong Like Bear will also simultaneously be on the air live. The music starts at 7 p.m., so come anytime after 6:30.
Please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of KHOI through your participation as audience and your generous contributions. Thank you for being with us during 2015. Thank you for the donations and wonderful letters of support. We look forward to being with you in 2016. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Could not have a David Wood.